So, Julia, who's your literary hero?
I've been reading Gertrude Stein again. You didn't list her as one
of
your heroes.
I didn't. That's because I was very sexist and only listed men.
That's what I was thinking.
And Gertrude Stein is right up there at the top.
I like Gertrude Stein for many of the same reasons I like Wallace Stevens. I don't completely understand her or, you know, understand what she's doing. Do you?
I often think I do. I think I can read Tender Buttons quite well in the sense of interpreting it, being able to produce a prose paraphrase or explanation. But something like Stanzas in Meditation, I can't do that at all. Mm-hmm. So I assume she's doing something different in those two books, and I think she really is. I think Stanzas in Meditation is much more abstract, much more detached from an interpretable ground. Now, people are tending nowadays to read everything she wrote as strictly autobiographical. And I think it probably is autobiographical, but I don't think it's any more interpretable that way than a life is. You know, biographies and novels are basically the same thing. They're both fictions. So I read something like Stanzas in Meditation the way you were saying. You just listen to Stevens and see if you get it. But you can't, you won't necessarily be able to tell the next person what you got. You just point at the poem and say, read that.
Do you think her writing really is more like painting than Wallace Stevens? More like visual art?
I don't think so. They often are. They're often visual on the page. Sometimes when she repeats, when she does one of those long grooves where the same words repeat, the words on the page are like an op-ed painting. They will actually vibrate while you're looking at them. I find her very stimulating to turn on the process or get out into the crazy. Mm-hmm. And more than once, I have stolen a line from Gertrude Stein to start a poem. Mm-hmm. When and where are arches washed and obelisks? I mean, how can you not write a poem?
Yeah,
or the one called "What Can You Say to Shoes?" I mean, that's her line. What can you say to shoes? How can you not write a poem after you read that line?
And you have a poem?
I have one that uses that as the first line. Sure.
What is the title of that poem?
I have no idea. It's so cool. So I find her, that whatever she does in her writing, and this is her real writing as opposed to her memoirs, which I find highly entertaining in a very different way. Mm-hmm. Whatever she is doing with language in her real work, and particularly the more poetic of her real work as opposed to, say, something like The Making of Americans. Whatever she is doing directly connects to whatever the processes of my mind are that get me over into that different way. She was a very smart woman. She was highly intellectual, a pupil of William James. I mean, this is someone who thought things through. But she doesn't use that part of herself when she's doing her best writing. She goes somewhere else, and somehow she leaves the door open so that, at least in my case, we can go through and get there.
Do you think it's her use of repetition?
I don't know what it is. I've never solved it, and I don't know that I want to solve it because it might shut the door. And my other heroes don't work that way. I read Nabokov and I wish I could write like that. Mm-hmm. Wow, I wish I could write like that. I have to be very careful when I write fiction to try not to write like that, because I'll just be writing bad Nabokov. But with Stein, I don't want to write the way she does.
Mm-hmm. I've always felt that the energy.
Yeah, the energy comes through. I think you said the right word.
Is what it would almost get anyone going. And it's a kind of, her language almost unfolds. You know, it begins one place and then keeps unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a kind of
momentum
that builds.
Sure works. I can get energy from Well, let's say Henry Miller, who I think has extraordinarily healthy energy in his writing, or Colin Wilson, whom I love to read, just for the energy. I just, at the end of it, feel so pumped up. But it's not the same kind of energy that you find in Gertrude Stein. It doesn't open the door. It just makes me feel good. And she makes me start writing.
I actually feel the same way about, I mean, some very contemporary writers as well.
Such as?
Well, I love James Tate for his images that just kind of, I feel like the top of my head is coming off. I don't write like he does,
right.
But his images take me somewhere else, mm-hmm. and I'm able to begin.
So he opens the door for you.
He opens the door, yeah. His images are just wild and strange. And Charles Simic is that way, too. I think it's, for me, it's poets who lean towards the surreal as opposed to the real.
Assuming that there's a difference.
Is there a difference? Do you not think there is?
I don't really think there is. Which is why so much so-called realistic writing is so boring, because those people think there's a difference.
Do you think realism is... Well, I mean, the phrase, the truth is stranger than fiction. I mean, do you think that realism is just as strange, unexplainable?
Sure. It's just as arbitrary. It's just as fictive. It's just as unreal. It's also, I think, a closed book. But so many contemporary American writers haven't figured that out yet. So they keep writing it. So tell me this. This is something that interests me about your work. Is there a line that you could draw, or is there a line at all between your poetry and your fiction? Well, one that says, this is fiction, and it's quite different from this other thing, which is poetry. In my case, I think there is a line. I think there's a fairly big divide, because I just had a memory of when I was reading at the YMHA in Philadelphia. At the end of my reading, which had been a fiction reading, a lady came up to me and said, I really enjoyed your poem.
Well, that's what my answer was going to be. I mean, poetry has lines.
Is it just laid out on the page? Do you think they sort of, one blurs into the other?
I think so.
I think a lot of folks wouldn't agree about their work. People who do write both will say, oh, my poems are very different from my stories.
I think I have some poems that are actually more narrative than the fiction I've been writing.
Hmm.
In terms of the development of a little story within the poem. But, yeah, I think they're very closely connected. Or the biggest difference between writing fiction and writing poetry for me is just that it has to be sustained longer, for a longer period of time,
well,
which is very challenging. But I don't know. I think that maybe people who are consider themselves more fiction writers than poets probably would not agree with that, because...
So you think we're both more poets than fiction writers?
I think that your fiction is fiction, and I think that your poetry is poetry. I think that there's a clear...
So you think there is a big difference?
In your writing. I think there's a smaller difference between my fiction and my poetry.
I would agree.
But I haven't written that much fiction. Maybe it will become farther.
Well, you may find out when you do a novel that... It's almost necessarily farther away.
You say that like I'm going to do a novel.
Oh, I thought you were working on one.
Yes, of course. I think that a novel, to complete a novel, will be very difficult. I think that I will.
It is difficult. It's a lot of pages.
Do you think you'll write another novel?
I would like to. I just don't know what I'm going to write. The groves of academe have beaten me up. I'm covered with bruises and... We just have to see. Once, get back out, do some road work, skip a little rope, I may be ready to re-enter that ring. I want to write some more stories. I like stories.
Do you think you're, because you have been a teacher of writing for so many years, do you think that your students have influenced your writing at all?
Sure, the students influence you. You learn things from student writers. You often don't know that's where you learned them, just the way from each other they learn things often without being aware of who they've learned it from. I get a great deal of energy from my students. Mm-hmm. That kind of youthful enthusiasm of seeing the future extending way, way out there is a great thing, because it's very easy to persuade yourself that, oh, I used to be a writer.
Do you think that you're, because you are a teacher of writing, you are more critical of your own writing?
I don't think so. I really don't. I'm not a very critical teacher of writing. That is, the father knows best model of teaching writing is not one that I can do. I can't even fake it very well, because I know that I don't know best. Once in a while I do. Once in a while I will know something. But very often the student who wrote the poem or the story we're reading knows a lot more about it than I do. Mm-hmm. So it's my job mainly to get them to figure out what they know.
Is that difficult?
It is difficult. I think the teaching of writing is extremely tiring. It's very different from doing, as I do, teach literature or film study, which I find very exciting and fun. The teaching of writing, you have to be so alert. You have to be working almost at the level in class that you are when you're writing your own work. I mean, theoretically, you should be at that level. But certainly every time you have to be alert, you have to be aware of the dynamic of the room, you have to be aware when things are straying off, when personal issues are getting in the way of real discussion. And at the end of a writing class, I'm always really tired.
And you have to try to figure out what each person and each student is doing with
their
own writing.
All the time.
And you have to be surprised. All the time. I mean, be willing to.
Willing to be surprised, yeah. I think bad writing teachers are the people who know the rules and then force their students to obey them. That's what I mean by father knows best. Teacher knows best. Do it my way. I don't think that ever produces very good writers.
Yeah, I think that that's one of the things I'm really lucky to have had that experience as a writer. To have teachers who did not teach me in that way.
Well, and that's why you have such a distinctive voice as a writer.
Well, thank you.
Well, that's one of the reasons you have a distinctive voice. One is you have a distinctive voice. Well, I think it's true. It's because no one tried to push you. Or if they tried, you didn't let them.
Right, and before I had you and Kathy Hankla and Jean Larson as teachers, I had Tom Whalen, who just introduced us to so many different kinds of writing to us as high school students. So we were able to just see what was out there before really forming, you know, our own
voice. So that you and Tom Whalen both agree that reading is an essential component to being a writer?
Hand in hand.
A lot of folks, I think, don't do much reading either.
That's why I always, I don't feel too guilty when I'm not writing, because I'm always reading, and I feel like that's the work that any writer needs to do in order to improve. So if you're not writing for a while and you're reading, I think that that's okay, because it's just, you're storing up a lot for when it actually comes out. You're always reading.
I'm reading all the time when I'm not loafing.
When you're not watching NASCAR.
And see, since I teach film study, this means that watching movies is work too. Mm-hmm. So that I can watch movies and feel no guilt whatsoever. So what would your last meal be?
I think a cheeseburger.
Well, we're both...
Or a shrimp po' boy.
No, you should definitely. Your sources in New Orleans need to be honored. A cheeseburger wouldn't do that. Are cheeseburgers different
in New
Orleans?
But they're so good.
They are
good.
There's
a place in the French Quarter called the Clover Grill that makes the best hamburgers, cheeseburgers in the whole entire world. Because there's a hubcap that's placed on top of the burger to make sure the cheese melts. It's really good.
Oh, I want one right now.
I do too.
Let's go.
Okay.